I'm Chris Farrell, and this is On Watch. Welcome to On Watch, everybody, the Judicial Watch podcast, where we go behind the headlines to cover news and information the mainstream media really doesn't want you to know about. We try to recover some lost history and explain the inexplicable. And today we're in luck because we have a great guest who will help us recover some lost history, and he's very good at explaining the inexplicable. We have Dan Schneider, Vice President for Media Research Center. He's also in charge of their Free Speech America project. Welcome to On Watch, Dan.
Hey, it's great to be here again.
Great. You're a recidivist. You're a repeat offender back here at Judicial Watch, and we appreciate the fact that you didn't run away in fear, that you actually decided to come back and hang out with us for a while. We appreciate it.
I think you know the high esteem I hold both you and the organization in.
That's great. And it's a mutual admiration society as well. We certainly appreciate all of your excellent work and the great work of MRC for many years now. I actually kind of been running in tandem, you know, doing what we do. It's very complimentary back and forth. The thing I really got you here for today is a great new publication you guys have put out called Law and Disorder. And that kind of touches in Judicial Watch land based on our mission, just the topic itself. But Law and Disorder looks at, I think, some very serious threats to our legal system. Why don't you give us an idea of what you've uncovered?
This is all about George Soros and now his son Alex Soros. And the people who are referred to as Soros prosecutors, you know, the left does not like that term. They want to say progressive prosecutors. In our country's history, we've always had prosecutors who are conservative or liberal, but generally speaking, prosecutors across the board have tried to prosecute crimes in an effort to protect citizens from bad guys.
Right.
These Soros prosecutors are different. Very different. If you could sort of divide their mission into two parts, on one hand, they really are trying to let criminals go on this belief system that people have become criminalized because of Western-style democracy and free markets. And then on the other hand, using...
So just pause for a second. Let's think about that. I'm going to be my usual New York self and interrupt you in various places. But so Western civilization is responsible for crime, and capitalism is so unfair that you're forcing these people to go out and commit crimes.
Yeah, this is the view of the radical left today. And then what these prosecutors then also do is target their political opponents, basically anybody who stands for freedom and the ideas of our nation's founding, and prosecute those people, whether they're police officers or politicians or just, you know, guys trying to protect their daughters from being, you know, sexually assaulted in public schools.
Right.
Now, this might sound inflammatory and conspiratorial, Chris, but... Following the lead of the great Judicial Watch, as you know, we've begun our own sort of FOIA operation.
Absolutely.
Trying to find documentation of how the left is operating. And we now have almost 8,000 pages of internal communications between these Soros prosecutors and their boss, the George Soros machine.
And that's really Open Society Foundations, plural foundations, and all sorts of associated and ancillary groups, right?
Essentially they're subsidiaries that
right.
they fund.
And they always have titles and names like, you know, the Center for American whatever.
I mean,
it's always...
Fair and just.
It sounds,
fair and just
sounds very noble. And,
yes. And so what we've discovered is that not only does George Soros spend millions and millions, $40 million and counting at least, in getting these radicals elected into these prosecutorial positions, but then he spends far more to continue to control these prosecutors. He directs their behavior. He determines what their priorities are going to be, and then he even sort of requires them to pledge not to enforce certain laws, and that in and of itself is unlawful.
compelling that that prosecutorial trend, forcing that is unlawful.
Yeah. So let me sort of walk through this with you. First, both the ethical standard and then the legal requirement.
Okay.
Prosecutors have discretion on how they're going to prioritize their resources, what laws they're going to prioritize, which laws, you know, because they don't have an unlimited budget.
Yeah,
can't do it all. What a prosecutor cannot do is veto the law.
Right.
A prosecutor is not allowed to say, well, I don't like those laws, so I'm not going to enforce those laws.
Right.
They can say, look, I've got limited resources. I'm going to prioritize these laws over here. If there are particularly bad things in those other laws, then I'll address those. But
nullification is not permitted.
Nullification, prosecutorial veto. This amounts to a prosecutorial veto. You know, a prosecutor is part of an executive branch agency. The president or a governor can veto bills that are passed by a legislature. A legislature can choose not to pass bills. But other executive branch officials, like prosecutors, they don't have a role in this. And they cannot unilaterally veto the law. That is unlawful. And from an ethics standpoint, if you're Kamala Harris running for office, you can elect either to announce what your policies will be or, in her case, what they will, she doesn't announce any policies
right.
other than to say, hey, I'm kind of like Donald Trump over here now. But people running for elective offices as judges or prosecutors under State Bar Association rules,
right.
they are not allowed to prejudge an outcome. They are not allowed to sign pledges, statements, say what they will enforce and what they will not enforce. We cannot have judges and prosecutors who do that, but that's exactly what these Soros prosecutors are doing.
It also just doesn't make sense. I mean, it's not very sensible for somebody to not just prejudge a case or a circumstance, but you also have no idea what's going to unfold in front of you. So to be able to say, well, before anything even happens, I've already reached a conclusion and I know, because there's all kinds of crazy circumstances and situations that come in front of law enforcement, prosecutors, and judges. So to like you said, to prejudge or to make some broad sweeping assertion about how something is going to be done, it's not just, against the judicial canons or against the bar code. It's stupid. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
Well, you say stupid. But this is exactly the tactic that the Soros machine is employing. For decades now, we've heard about judges becoming, trying to act like legislators, trying to create law from the bench. The left has used that to great effect, of course. And now George Soros has thought, well, why don't I create law, not with judges, but with prosecutors? And I'll just have prosecutors like Alvin Bragg. If for anybody who followed that Alvin Bragg criminal prosecution
right.
of Donald Trump, he invented new law. And, of course, Judge Mershon has permitted that to
right.
take place.
Right.
He's invented criminal law to try to go after Donald Trump.
And judges do that all the time, sadly. They'll just elect to focus on a certain thing or area and neglect it. So just for fun, because we try to make this interesting, I'm going to give you two sort of devil's advocate hypotheticals. Is there anybody on the right, is there any sort of group, organization, or person from the conservative world who is similarly funding or advocating or, I know that Soros has done, it's like 120 or something. It's a large number of races or elections.
Part of our research is that, in the past people thought that there were somewhere around 60, 65 of these Soros prosecutors.
Right.
We now have 126 known Soros prosecutors.
So people that his organizations have given money to, advocated for, given direction, that sort of stuff.
So we've discovered these private meetings. They're called convenings, where he assembles his prosecutors. And he then directs what they're going to prioritize the pledges. So it's this secret, silent.
That compounds it, makes it even worse.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that literally is conspiratorial when you have secret meetings,
secret mandatory attendance,
right, and you give direction. and synchronize activities. I mean, that literally is a conspiracy.
Yeah.
So
a conspiracy to break the law,
right?
Which is right. Unlawful. That's called RICO.
So back to my, I started and then I went off with a bunny trail. But is there anybody on the right doing this? Is there any organization saying, let's have MAGA prosecutors and we're going to give them $100 million?
No. No, obviously, people might know that in their local DA race that there's you know, local money going behind some DA. You know, that's
yeah.
Political.
But there's no synchronized comparison or comparable, which just goes to show you how stupid Republicans are.
Well, or how clever George Soros is.
Right, right. But I mean, there's no competing opposition. It's just this sort of the political adversary just rolls over and goes, oh, well, you know. Other than you exposing this, but there's no organized opposition.
Right. Then, of course, when we expose this, because the name Soros is invoked, then we're accused of being anti-Semites.
Which was the second question I had, because in my experience, personally and professionally, the minute you say Soros, people say, ah, you're using that as a scare tactic and a boogeyman, and it's anti-Semitic, and you're really, it's a dog whistle to the white nationalist, blah, 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 blah. There's a lot of rhetoric that gets whipped around.
False rhetoric designed because George Soros, I mean, this is objectively true, proven without contest. George Soros has put more money behind the Democrat Party and Democrat candidates than anybody else, by far. He is the main funder for Democrats. And then he has the Open Society Foundations,
right?
Where he funds all these radical organizations. He controls these radical organizations to do radical things. So the left loves him. And the left does not want the public to know what's going on. Just like Kamala Harris does not want the public to know what she's going to do if she's
right.
elected president.
Right.
So the left does what it does, which is try to shame or silence people who would expose what's going on.
Right.
Now, Chris, I'm Jewish. You know, why am I not allowed to point out that this man who has put in more money than anybody else to
right.
radicalize America, that what he's doing is wrong, when in fact, I mean, and you can go to the 60 Minutes tape yourself, where he says that he and his father worked with the Nazis when they rolled into Hungary to help confiscate property from Jews. This is the George Soros today who's radicalizing the world.
Right.
Now, who's the better Jew? I mean, this is just absurd to claim that attacking this radical who's trying to upend the world, that to exposing him is anti-Semitic.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what happens. This is a sort of this dog whistle politics where people, you know, will claim that you're sending signals or trying to influence or, you know, it's you know, a thinly veiled attack on fill in the blank. It has to be addressed. I mean, I think you just did perfectly. But, I mean, it's one of the things that when you engage in this discussion on this topic, you have to be able to sensibly, logically, just kind of knock down what's a false choice argument. It's simply there's no foundation to it. So there's probably some prosecutors that people will instantly recognize, mm-hmm.
Like Alvin Bragg.
Alvin Bragg in New York. There was the guy out in San Francisco whose parents were terrorists.
Chase Boudin. A San Francisco Soros prosecutor who was so radical that even the radical voters voted him out of office. They got tired of him.
And I think like half of his staff, attorneys and paralegals, said, we can't do this.
Right.
There was a huge, internally, there was a revolution where his own staff said, this is too much even for us in San Francisco. And people resigned or threatened to resign, which goes to show you. I mean, that's similar to Vice President Harris's staff, right, which has like a 92% turnover rate.
Yeah.
You know? When you have high turnover rate in an organization, that is a key signal something is very wrong there. It's a mm-hmm. leadership failure 9 times out of 10. So you've gotten all these documents. The thing that I love about documents, and I'm sure you do too, is even if you don't believe me or you don't like my editorial take on a particular thing, okay, fine. There's the document. You read it. You tell me what it means.
And, of course, we put all the documents up on the website.
Right.
Which you're free to go look at all the documents.
It deflates all the arguments because when you have a convening, right, which is what they call their meetings, and it's mandatory attendance and you must agree and sign your loyalty oath or whatever it is, and that's craziness.
So, Chris, I like this long-form format because I'm able to explain this thing I find really interesting.
You don't have 8 seconds.
These prosecutors, you know, attended the mandatory meetings.
Right.
And you know, they were told, come hither.
They were summoned.
And so they were summoned, so they attended. And some of these prosecutors then properly disclosed the travel, you know, through their ethics process.
Right.
And others did not because they felt like this was their job.
Yeah.
George Soros has called a meeting. I'm required to attend. It's just part of my job function. It's not a gift. My travel that was paid for by George Soros.
Right.
And so now we've got these internal communications saying, well, I didn't disclose this.
They're
and
going
now
to see
and now I'm in trouble.
Right.
You know, what did you do? Like, oh, well, we disclosed it. All these internal communications. Right. And so guess when these prosecutors who did not satisfy their legal requirement to disclose this travel, this gift, when they needed to retain counsel, guess who paid for their legal representation?
Open Society Foundations.
George Soros. Right. George Soros paid the legal bills for the prosecutors who got in trouble for not disclosing the travel that George Soros had paid for.
Which is interesting because you would think, or maybe not, you know, these are supposedly legal smart guys. I use that term advisedly. That they would realize that there's going to be scrutiny of their accounts.
But this reflects the boss called. This is part of my job. The boss called. I'm going to go to the meeting.
So part of it's really stupid and part of it's really arrogant, right?
It reflects how they think about their jobs.
Yeah. So who else are kind of some of the lunatic fringe operators out there that are...
Well, you know, Keith Ellison, the Attorney General of Minnesota.
Yeah, I interviewed a woman that he jailed for, well, actually ended up being 60 days, but sentenced to 90 days for opening her coffee shop. Lisa Hansen, she's been interviewed by Tucker. We've had her on as well. And this was under the illustrious Coach Walls, his edict in Minnesota about shutting everything down. Naturally, strip clubs, abortion clinics, and liquor stores could stay open. But her coffee shop, she had to close it.
Right.
So she did not close it. I mean, she closed it for a while. Then she said, this is ridiculous. Reopened it, and then Keith Ellison and Walls went after her and jailed her, jailing a grandmother for having a coffee shop. And this was a mom-and-pop operation. This was not some big chain or whatever. Anyway, this goes to show you the mentality.
Yeah.
And they basically told her, not in open court or anything, but in pretrial, because she represented herself, we're punishing you. We have to make an example of you.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the mentality that you're dealing with.
Yeah, and close to where we are right now in Loudoun County was the infamous Buddha Bibiraj, I think that's how she pronounces her name, who, Loudoun County, that's where made international news on how the school board there was pushing these radical policies. And
this is the crazy gender theory stuff,
yes,
right, with transgender kids,
right,
mixed bathrooms, and all the rest of it.
So, a young high school girl was sexually assaulted in a bathroom by a boy who identified as a girl. And this girl's father was went before the school board to say, I am pleading with you. And the school board, of course, covered up not just that sexual assault, but a second sexual assault by the same boy. And that father was then arrested, and Buddha Bibiraj did everything she could to incarcerate that man for trying to protect his daughter.
Yeah, and I think I'm guessing a number of our viewers and listeners will have seen that video. I guess the dad got up to speak, open mic session in front of the board, and he's wrestled to the ground, and because he dared to say, "Hey, wait a minute, this isn't true what you're saying," and tries to. But again, that was part of the cover-up, trying to not have him tell the truth about what was going on with this kid who was assaulting his daughter. But also, I think there was also an additional assault aside from that. So this is not just a question of not agreeing on policy, right? This is not, like two policy wonks arguing over tax percentages.
Mm-hmm.
This is real revolutionary craziness.
It is. Right. So for criminals on the left, these Soros prosecutors let them go. They let them walk during the whole, you know, mostly peaceful protests where we saw
cities burning,
you know, federal courthouses being burned to the ground. And, you know, those people were all let go. Maybe the police arrested them, but these prosecutors, you know, did not indict. They were let go, not even with a slap on the wrist. They just released and no charges filed. Yet, when you're on the right, and I say on the right, if you're just a regular American trying to, you know, live your life like a coffee shop or trying to protect your daughter,
right,
you get prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
Yeah, there's real vendetta involved. It's not just a matter of, hey, we're not putting up with this and we're going to, you know, take a law and order approach. This is like a really insidious sort mm-hmm. of vindictiveness that you don't normally see.
In New York, you've got Daniel Penny, Marine Corps veteran Daniel Penny, who was trying to protect a woman who was being, you know, assaulted by, you know, a man.
On the subway,
The subway. You've got, you know, a bodega owner, you know, one of these small little shops selling, you know, bubble gum and newspapers, you know, where a young man attacked him, and he was simply trying to defend himself. And both of these guys get arrested and instantly jailed for either trying to protect another citizen or trying to protect himself. And they're instantly incarcerated by these Soros prosecutors.
So the philosophical thing behind this operation, because this is a concerted effort, right? This is not some kind mm-hmm. of stream of consciousness. Oh, we bumped into a guy and he seemed like a great person, so we want to help him out. That's the sort of anecdotal, incidental. This is a determined, established, planned,
a coordinated
executed,
attack.
Right.
It's a So when a police officer is indicted, literally, champagne is popped and corked, and they celebrate all over the country. These prosecutors are communicating. We've got their internal communication, their emails saying, yeah, another one's just been indicted, and they literally celebrate.
Did you get anything in the paperwork on Minneapolis, on what was going on there? There's a great documentary called The Fall of Minneapolis, which mm-hmm. sort of details all that occurred mm-hmm. in that city. And was there any particular focus on that?
So we didn't focus on any one jurisdiction.
Yeah.
But yes, there are a couple Soros prosecutors in that Minneapolis area who were shutting down businesses. You mentioned this coffee shop owner. There's this barbershop owner who, you know, is an African American man who his politics probably lean left, and he's just saying, "Let me just do my business,"
yeah.
And he was then indicted for trying to do his business. Plenty of examples of no crimes being prosecuted when car dealerships were burned to the ground. And
so let's look at you said about 126 prosecutors. How much money have they poured into this?
Well, so what we know, what we can document is $117 million, but of course
there's it's more than that.
More than that.
Yeah.
But let me just say, when we say 126 prosecutors, those are the people who George Soros funded their elections, attended these mandatory meetings, and or signed these pledges to break the law. But there are so many more that we know of, but they didn't fall into one of those three categories. So let me just give you this example. When these prosecutors hold office, you know, there are lots of other prosecutors, career prosecutors in the that work in those offices.
Sure.
The Soros machine is now placing young attorneys into those offices. He is the HR department for the placement of young attorneys.
That's very interesting.
So when you know, a recent law school graduate from your favorite law school gets placed, well, that's a radical Soros person, but we don't call that a prosecutor because they've not done one of those these three things.
Right.
So there
right.
are far more of these radicalized Soros right. handpicked people, but
so they're ideologically aligned, and actually they're going to be doing all the work, right?
They're mission oriented.
Yeah.
And maybe we should add a fourth category yeah. of all the people that Soros has placed, but it's harder for us to figure out who all those people are.
Yeah.
You know, it's based on the documents.
You know, we've been asking Jack Smith to explain who his staff members are, mm-hmm. and won't disclose it. We've sued over it.
Wait about 10 years. You'll get the answer
but,
10 years
but,
from
I mean,
now.
We did find out. In the Mueller investigation, and I guess they learned their lesson, don't ever give Judicial Watch
right.
our staffing.
No, you guys have been
because we said
fabulous.
We wanted to know who's on your staff and how much money you're spending, which we don't think are unreasonable questions for a large public prosecution mm-hmm. about a major, you know, public issue. Why can't we know who's on your staff and how much money you're spending?
Or you guys are leading the fight on trying to figure out the countries where the members, you know, the people on the terrorist watch list who have come across the border illegally,
yeah.
you're like, what countries have they come from? And the Biden-Harris administration will not tell you.
Well, that is an ancient, and I mean that almost literally, that is an ancient fight going all the way back to 9/11. We had asked for, you know, we didn't want to get into the personal privacy
right.
stuff because
right.
that's a dead end. So we said, don't tell us who by name, or we don't want their date and place of birth and all that jazz. Not interested. Just give us a listing of countries. Oh, no. That would be a violation of the press. And we're talking about 9/11 hijackers even, you know, or persons affiliated with that. Literally, the terrorists had their privacy rights trumped the public's right to know. And the government has held this position for 20-some-odd years.
It's outrageous. It is outrageous.
This is
supposed to be our government. We the people. This is supposed to be us radical left-wing bureaucrats.
Yeah.
They don't want us involved in representational democracy.
And it's a transparently phony excuse. No privacy issue surfaces. We're not interested in name or date and place of birth or all this sort of, you know, mm-hmm. personal identifying data that people protect. Just give us a sketch of, like, how many and from where. Oh, no. That, because their claim is, and this is also totally phony, is that it might reveal, you know, sources and methods of intelligence that, you know, somehow that they could figure out where somebody's from. That would blow open, you know, the nation would be at risk somehow.
So, Chris, in the Bush administration, I was the general counsel at a federal agency. And at that agency, the general counsel also oversaw the response to FOIA requests. And I had all of these career attorneys reporting to me. And I had them give me a report weekly or every other week on how we were responding.
Right.
And they were always wanting to use the exception of pre-decisional.
Right, B5. Right?
This is pre-decisional. and I would ask them, well, how is this pre-decisional? And there'd be these blank stares like, well, it's a good exception so that we don't have to prove it. Like, just a second. We're not in the business of withholding information.
Yeah.
We'll withhold information when it really meets yeah. a standard that's appropriate under the law.
It's a disclosure statute, not a retention statute.
These FOIA officers across the executive branch, look, and of course there's some good ones, there's some mediocre ones, and there's some bad ones.
Yeah. More bad.
probably. Yeah. You would have, look, I've got a narrower set of experiences than you
sure.
do, so I will
sure.
believe you. But I can tell you that the FOIA officers who reported to me, uniformly, they were breaking the law. And I'd say, no. And then same with Congress. When Congress would ask for information.
I don't know why I'm laughing.
They would try to withhold information from Congress. And then when I was running a different federal agency in the Bush administration, the staff would try to withhold information from Congress. We're like, why are you doing this? Well, we don't have to produce it. But we have discretion, right? We can produce it. Let's produce it. Why? What? We have nothing to hide, right?
Right.
And they would look at me like, yeah, we have a lot to hide. Like, we're going to disclose it.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's one of the other great lessons is that all these people you're talking about, when they go home at night, you know, they go to the surrounding counties of D.C., mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So whether it's Arlington, Fairfax, Montgomery
yeah.
PG, whatever. And if you look at the voting trends in those counties, they're all like 96% Democratic, right?
Yeah.
So that's your rank-and-file government employee who goes in to man or not no one mans the offices anymore, but that's who's staffing these government agencies. And so, I mean, this is a lesson Trump learned the hard way. You could put somebody in charge, and okay, great, they show up at agency X, and they're in charge, and they're the new administrator or general counsel or whatever. But the entire rank and file of the organization hates you. And the, they will roll their eyes at everything you say and go, yeah, right. Or as Whitaker Chambers famously said, you don't have to actually do anything to sabotage the system. You just have to kind of forget or make a mistake every once in a while.
Yeah.
And it tanks the entire operation.
So for the last 4 years of the Bush administration, I ran a federal agency at HHS. And I had 23 political appointees reporting to me. And I was constantly having to remind these political appointees who reported to me, your career staff, they'll tell you how great you are. They'll tell you how smart you are and how much better you were than the Obama folks or the Clinton folks, rather, who came before. They're not telling you the truth. And half of the political appointees who reported to me believed me, and the other half would just sort of like roll their eyes.
Yeah. But they're nice to me.
Until we got near the end of the administration.
Yeah.
And then the knives really came out.
Yeah.
And those naive political appointees, they're coming to me like, I can't believe it. My staff has now turned on me. Like, I told you. And they've been withholding information from me the whole time.
Yeah. The Daily Caller had an article yesterday talking about how Biden, Harris, and all the munchkins underneath are very aggressively loading up DOJ with Schedule A appointments.
Right.
Which are basically all the... It's all the landmines. It's all the embedded political operatives who, should Trump win the next election and become president, they will go to work every day to destroy him.
Right. And you've got a very, very smart audience. But a Schedule A is essentially a political appointee who survives the next administration as an attorney or an accountant or some sort of professional.
Yeah.
But they, yes. And then every time there's a Republican president, when it comes to an end, you've got all these Democrats on the Hill and others shrieking, you're trying to embed all your political appointees. And you know, the last time, it was like two in the entire administration who sort of like burrowed in. Whereas Democrats, boy, they just jam all their political appointees into career jobs.
Which is the same problem, going back to our DAs. That is who is staffing all the ADA and other paralegal, probably, folks, the guys who actually go to work every day and, you know, manage these cases and do the prosecutions and conduct the investigations and assemble the case files, all the kind of nitty-gritty work to bring a prosecution about, all of them are out of the Soros school of personnel management are placed in those positions. So even if if you have a DA like Chase
Aboudin.
Yeah. If he self-destructs, it doesn't matter, right?
Because he's populated the place.
Yeah.
One of these prosecutors in Texas has tattooed on his chest, full width of his chest, not guilty. That's the tattoo on his chest. And he proudly, you can Google it, you know, he proudly has these pictures on the internet, not guilty. This is a prosecutor in Houston, not guilty.
This is really wild. Yeah. So what's the solution? I mean, besides educate, you've provided part of the solution. You've gotten facts, information, documents, records. You put together a fantastic report. We'll link it to this episode and shoot that to our folks. But now that we have this information, now what do we do?
All right. So there are lots of different things based on who you are. We're calling on the media actually to cover George Soros. Actually cover him.
Good luck with that.
We can be aspirational.
That's true.
Yeah,
That's true.
He is one of the most influential people on the planet.
How about Alex? He's even more radical than Daddy.
And then his dad, Alex Soros, Alexander Soros, he's taken over the family business. He's taken over the gigantic empire.
With Huma Abedin as his
new paramour.
Soon-to-be bride.
And so, hey, media, do your job. Cover this. Individual governors and state AGs can take action. DeSantis has removed two of these Soros prosecutors for neglect of duty in Florida. And in Texas, Attorney General Paxton is taking some action.
So state by state, there may be opportunities.
Yes.
Because every state constitution is different. Every governor has different authority. But if you have a guy who's completely out of whack, there are instances when a governor or an attorney general can either, sanction them in some way, remove them, correct them, whatever.
Now, if you're not an AG or a governor, like most of your audience is neither of those, you can bring complaints before the State Bar Association in your own state.
The left loves doing that. They always complain about any attorney that defends President Trump.
Right. So the Texas Five, these infamous five source prosecutors, and there are more than five in Texas, but there's these five
the
people.
The gang of five.
The Texas Five. They really interesting communications between these folks. Where they have signed pledges not to enforce the law, that says children cannot have sex change operations.
Right.
And they vowed we are not going to enforce that law, or on curbs on abortion, that we are not going to enforce these laws. Okay, well, that's unlawful and unethical to sign these pledges. So individuals, whether you're an attorney or not, I guess I don't know what the Texas rules are in the Texas Bar Association. Maybe only barred attorneys in Texas can file these complaints. But in Texas, why don't you file these complaints?
It'd be fun to find out, right? You could probably find out in about 10 minutes looking on the internet, go to the bar and figure out what the requirements are. I mean, you can do it by letter. You can do it by email in some cases. You just have to say, hi, I'm John Q. Citizen. I live at XYZ Street.
And by the way, in our report, and it's a 30-some-page report, but we do end with the list of all 126 prosecutors state.
Nice.
So if you're from Missoula, Montana, you can find out who your source prosecutor is in Montana or in any of these locations.
Right, right. That's very good. So individual citizens, and of course, in instances where DAs or attorneys general are elected, you can certainly exercise your voting rights and hold people accountable.
Yeah. Well, most of these people are elected. There are some who are appointed, but most of these Soros prosecutors are elected.
So you can make an informed election decision, and you can tell friends and family what the real deal is. I guess also, there are probably some really great prosecutorial stats that are out there, right? You can look at who's prosecuting what. I mean, obviously, California is completely out of control, right? So Prop 47, I guess, turned all kinds of felonies into misdemeanors. Mm-hmm. So basically, unless you steal over $1,000 or $975 worth of goods, it's like getting a parking ticket, mm-hmm. right? And you've seen stores video, smash and grab, people going in and grabbing high-dollar stuff and running out. And you also see a lot of this destroys the tax base, because then you see a lot of businesses saying, well, this is all wonderful fun and games, but we can't afford it, and our insurance company is going to drop coverage on us, so we have to close our store. We have to move out. Mm-hmm. And they endanger their own employees, right? I mean, this is a very dangerous business in California, but it's not just California. It's elsewhere. So looking at stats on prosecutions should be interesting.
Yeah. The state with the most Soros prosecutors? Virginia.
Really?
Virginia has more Soros prosecutors than any other state.
Wow, oh, wow. As a resident of the Commonwealth of Virginia, I am alarmed. That's
I knew there were Alexandria, but then going south too.
Wow. Yeah, and I think for the most part, that's people get elected not because, a lot of it is, I think, I hate to use this word, I use it advisedly, but it's ignorance, right? The voting population, they look at the big races and the big kind of top of the ticket names, and down ballot, they're not really paying attention.
I don't know who the person is. How can I decide who to vote for?
Right.
But the Soros machine, they're educating all the radical voters on who to vote for.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we got a general election coming up, and certainly our viewers and listeners should pay close attention to what's out there.
Is it an election or a beauty contest? I think one side is trying to make it into a beauty contest.
Yeah, well, they're probably operating at a deficit there as well. But nonetheless, it's an important election for all kinds of reasons, not just the presidency, but down ballot, right? There's all kinds of issues. My rule of thumb on any bond question, by the way, this is more just kind of fun facts. If there are any government agencies asking for more money, my answer is no. I don't care what the question is. Oh, but wait a minute, it's for schools, it's for parks. No, because all these bond measures, you end up just kicking the can and putting your grandchildren in debt. The government has enough money. It doesn't need any more. And a lot of things people don't realize, you know, the government doesn't have any money it hasn't taken from you or me or one of these people watching. So we're going to link your report, but where can people learn more about MRC, this project, the world famous Dan Schneider?
I think the world famous Dan Schneider, there's one from Nickelodeon and another one who's a German terrorist.
We're not talking to.
No, he's in prison in Germany, a bad guy. So I'm at mrcfreespeechamerica.org.
mrcfreespeechamerica.org.
Of course, the mothership is just mrc.org. And then
once you get into there, there's all kinds of places to maneuver.
Newsbusters.org is kind of our online publication.
Yeah, that's fun. Because you really hold people to account. You show how the media skews so far to one side, very rarely to the other, on coverage of stuff. I find it very interesting, speaking of newsbuster-type questions, but President Trump goes to Arlington to memorialize the 13 service members killed at Abbey Gate, and the only news coverage you see is that supposedly there was some kind of altercation or argument or some kind of kerfluffle away from the Tomb of the Unknowns in a different area where someone was upset that somebody was taking pictures. But all the news coverage is Trump staff fights Arlington. It's his
right.
It's all misdirection.
Right.
All misdirection.
Yeah. And at the same time, who's the president of the United States?
He's on the beach. They got a picture of him laying out.
Which is the bigger scandal?
Yeah.
That Xi Jinping and Putin and the tyrant in Brazil and the tyrant in Venezuela, and we can go on and on and on, that they now have free reign. We don't have an aircraft carrier in the China, anywhere near China
today. Pacific, yeah.
And the Philippines is now getting beaten up and Taiwan might be invaded. And we have no functional president of the United States today.
Yeah, yep. It's
but instead, because some Arlington Cemetery staffer was upset that somebody was taking a picture of Donald Trump, that's the national news.
Yeah, we are in very grave danger. And you know, there's a great book by a Brit, Christopher Clark. It's called The Sleepwalkers. It talks about how all of Europe sleepwalked into World War One, and you know, it's sort of the 1914 moment that I believe we're in.
Yeah.
I mean, I have very grave concerns about how Russia-Ukraine's being mismanaged, Israel and Gaza. You have an administration here is bending over backwards to, you know, play games with Hamas and apply pressure to Israel, which I view is outrageously insane. It's like telling the U.S. knock it off about a month or now a year after 9/11, right? It's just, we went to war for 20 years over 9/11. And there's hostages still being held.
And internationally, speech is being criminalized.
Right.
3,000 people a year are incarcerated in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, I mean, the UK is going right down the toilet on First Amendment issues.
And Canada, you've seen this new Canada legislation that Trudeau has introduced in this system they have where he's prime minister, so he can introduce legislation. So it's very likely to come into law where once you've been accused of misinformation or hate speech, you can be sentenced to house arrest. Pending the investigation, your communications devices can be withheld from you. And if you're found guilty of hate speech or misinformation, the prison sentence, and I'm not making this up, Chris, is up to a lifetime sentence. This is in Canada, north of us.
Orwell did not intend 1984 as an instruction manual. It was supposed to be a warning.
Yeah.
That is what we're looking at. And yeah, there's a lot of creepy stuff going on in the world, and that's why Media Research Center and Newsbusters and your efforts at Free Speech America are so important to not let that garbage take place here. So
we are on the verge of something really, really terrible if we do not take back the reins of power in this country. And allow, and when I say we, I mean the people. We're supposed to be a constitutional republic where the people have a say in what happens.
Yeah, that's the opening line of the the Constitution, right? We the people. It's not us, the government, right? It's we the people. So, Dan, thank you for coming back in and for talking to us about this very important report that you have, Law and Disorder. And I think everyone has now been commissioned to go forth and educate themselves and inform their friends and family, you know, other neighbors about what's going on, and to be aware of exactly who they're voting for when it comes to who's prosecuting laws in their locality. So, Dan, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Chris.
I'm Chris Farrell on Watch.